This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
You wanted law and order in this town. You've got it.
Randy! 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 Where's the rest of me?
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us.
There are cynics who say that a party platform is something that no one bothers to read and it doesn't very often amount to much. Whether it is different this time than it has ever been before, I believe the Republican Party has a platform that is a banner of bold, unmistakable colors with no pale pastel shades.
A while back along the campaign trail, I was doing a question and answer session when a little girl, couldn't have been more than 6 or 7 years old, stood up, asked a question I'd heard before, but coming from her, it threw me. She said, "Why do you want to be president?"
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
March 30th, 1981.
Mr. President!
We hear much from Moscow about a new policy of reform and openness. Some political prisoners have been released. Some economic enterprises have been permitted to operate with greater freedom from state control. Are these the beginnings of profound changes in the Soviet state, or are they token gestures intended to raise false hopes in the West? We welcome change and openness. The advance of human liberty can only strengthen the cause of world peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ronald Wilson Reagan, February 6, 1911 to June 5, 2004, was an American politician who served as the 40th president of the United States from 1981 to 1989.
The life of Ronald Reagan, coming soon on 10 American Presidents. I'm Chris Stewart from the History of China podcast, and I approve this message.
Well, hello, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Nicholas Barnes from Vitel here. We're the company that provides, for absolutely no recompense at all, the telephone number you can call in and leave a message on. I just wanted to share with you a new feature we've added. You can now use the same telephone number to record a Dumpty Dum for the beginning of the show. It's clever, it's cool, and all the hip kids are doing it. Simply call 0203 031 3105 and follow the prompts. You'll hear my dulcet tones guiding you through the whole thing. And when it comes to record the Dumpty Dum, you'll hear it in your ear while you're singing, humming, instrumenting, or, well, however you're performing it yourself. It's that easy. Oh, and it can be anonymous too. Nobody has to know it's you. Go on, give it a try. 0203 031 3105.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Lydia, I have been asked by my friend Lexi to submit a Dumpty Dum on her behalf because she's at a bit of a loose end. So here we go. Dumpty Dum, de dum, de dum. Dumpty Dum, de da dum. Dumpty Dum, de dum, de dum. Dum de diddly dum. Dum de diddly, dum de diddly, dum de diddly dum. Dum de dum, de dum, de dum. Dum de diddly dum. Was that okay?
That was Marlena Dietrich. I'm not sure it was Lexi.
It was very entertaining, whoever it's supposed to be, folks. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality ducky drama that are centred at Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the well-oiled machine that is Roy Field Brown, and with me I have the flabby misshape that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Lee's personality transplant, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum was from our Lexi, channelled from Lydia. So thank you for that, Lydia. Now, Lucy, someone who would like to send us in a Dumpty Dum, how exactly can they send us that Dumpty Dum?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction or just have a chat, then call us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Yokel Bear and Millie Bell, our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Shambridge for her voices, and Derek for the loan of the back bedroom. Derek's decided to raise funds for the NHS by running a nude marathon in his garden. It started off as a marathon anyway, but it became hurdles because of the nettles.
Well done. I quite like that gag. Well done. On this week's episode, we hear views from Merlin, Margot with a hard T, Witherspoon, JR. Is it Hartley or Ewing? Verity, Dusty, Tony, Fiona, General Store is back. We're saluting him. New York Nigel and Quilted Bunny. But first, before all that good stuff, it's our Juicy Loose and our week in Ambridge.
Well, this week in Ambridge, it was Bank Holiday Monday at the start of the week, closely followed by April Fool's Day and October half term. Happy Christmas! We began the week having toast with Roy and Phoebe. Roy was just getting the toast out of the tumble dryer when Phoebe announced she could now read Justin. Look, she said, it says on this bit of paper, I am coming to take all your money, ha 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 ha. Justin and Phoebe had a meeting. Strange that the other two stooges aren't ever there when Justin is. It's like watching a panther pick off the weakest gazelle. Anyway, you could tell the meeting was on site because Phoebe kept saying, on site. Justin told her flatly that the Three Rewilding Stooges scheme for developing the buildings was unrealistic. Not if it works, said Phoebe cleverly. That's like saying unicorns are mythical, but not if they're real. Sherlock Tucker is slowly getting to the bottom of the Philip thing. Really, really slowly. Like time-lapse photography slowly. Roy went to visit Blake and he was gone. Amazing, with a broken back. How the hell did they get him into the van? Or did they just hoist him into the back with a forklift, waving cheerily at the nursing staff the while? Philip then invited Helen and Roy round to discuss the wedding arrangements and made curried all sorts, as Krusty put it. That proves what kind of an animal he is. Who curries all sorts? Linda is still being a bit of a grumpy pants. I wish I could do something for Lindy, Robert said. You can, Robert. Stop doing things you think she would like and trotting around the village telling people that you just want to find out what she would like and actually do what she is telling you she would like. However, although she didn't want you to kick Philip Moss in the knackers, we did. So well done, you. Lillian popped in to see her and they cackled away together. Justin and I would fight like cats in a sack if we couldn't get away from each other, said Lillian thoughtfully. Well, cat in a sack fighting season starts, ooh, May, I should think, Lillian. We'll look forward to that. Linda brightened up considerably at the prospect of Mrs. Ellis coming to stay. Who is Mrs. Ellis? Janet Ellis from Blue Peter. I felt a bit bad that I'd never taken any notice of Mrs. Ellis before, as Linda is clearly hugely fond of her. I'm wondering if Linda's accident has prompted her to switch teams, you know. She only sounds pleased when Lillian or Mrs. Ellis is mentioned and deeply unimpressed by all men. I hope I'm right. The life and loves of Linda the Leser would be far more interesting than whatever's going on at the moment. She'd be a proper 1970s unreconstructed lesbian too, doing exploring your sexuality sessions for the women of the village. She'd have to put a sign up for poor Robert. If the shepherd huts are rocking, don't come a-knocking. Shula, in between worrying about her baps, is taking her mind off it by doing lots of exercise with her fat horses. I'm sticking very closely to Yakult's weight loss programme, she said. I'm only having a sack of oats for breakfast, lunch and dinner. Poor Krusty, the Job of Ambridge, to add insult to injury, is now having to have a hen night with Helen. Just Helen. We can have fun, just the two of us, Helen reassured her. I've got some jumpers that have gone bobbly. Shula bashed Kenton's bishop. She said he sounded like a bad imitation of Jim. Even a bad imitation of Jim is preferable to the actual Kenton. But anyway, they worked together to think about what the hell she could say to her baps. She said she was well organised and punctual. He said she was controlling and sensitive. At no point did either of them discuss God, Christianity, faith or other people. So off she trotted to some clerical hostel somewhere that smells of damp chips to have giggly midnight feasts of Wopsits and Jaffa Cakes with an ex-welder called Cynthia who'd seen the light. Shula emerged traumatised with her belongings in a little see-through bag to find Kenton sitting on the doorstep. She was delighted as she said she couldn't face that train journey. I'm not entirely sure how she thought she was getting home then, as she got there by train. Were you planning on living with the bishops then, Shula, or what? I'm not sure that counts as well organised, to be honest. Who knew that cricket could be such a life-changing game? Well, personality-changing anyway. For a start, I'd always imagined Tracy as a sort of slightly rounded good-time girl in chunky heels, the sort who wears tights under her jeans to pull everything in. Now, she appears to be a sleek fitness monster, 20 Marlboro Lights a day notwithstanding. Lee was a slightly gormless but placid physiotherapist who has now become Windsor Davis in It Ain't Our Fault, Mum, apparently on Tracy's instruction. I'm not sure he'd even have that much testosterone in him, to be honest. Tracy's got way more. Anyway, it was all very baffling as some lunatic had given Tracy a megaphone and she patrolled with that while Lee just worryingly shouted, pump, pump, over and over. It wasn't harassment style at all. He just sobs with gratitude if anyone turns up and gives everyone a kebab and a pint as a warm-up just to thank them. On the strength of this, Roman the idiot has persuaded Tracy to consider what he refers to as a coup d'etat. Once Tracy had grasped what a coup d'etat was and that it wasn't a small animal that lives up in a eucalyptus tree, she was all for it. So I have a horrible feeling we have months of cricketing wrangling coming up. Or do we? Hopefully, this will all happen off mic in the closed season and we can come back just in time for bloody bonfire night when we'll have Eddie trundling round picking up bits of fence panelling in his tractor, Neil guarding the fireworks and Emma shouting, "Be careful, Kira," and things will be normal and there will still be honey for tea. Thank God for that. The end.
Oh, well done, you. Oh. A triumph.
That was a horrible week to write. It really was.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you managed to still bang these out, considering, you know, you're stretching yourself with your...
But it was awful, because...
With all your other writing gigs that you're doing for Dum-Dee-Dum.
You remember Robin Helen?
I remember
thing.
It well.
Yeah. Mm. That went on for several decades. And...
Yes.
Every
millennia.
Every week, every time the scene cuts, I'd say you had Rob going, "No, I need to talk to you, Helen." And then you'd have a scene with Susan and Clary in the dairy, and you'd think, shut up, shush, doesn't matter about that. Let's find out what's happening with Rob and Helen. And at the moment, for me anyway, I don't know how anyone else is feeling, this Philip and Gav story is hanging over everything. And I'm resenting any kind of move that moves away from that plot to go and do nonsense about that, especially when it is such nonsense about the cricket team and whatever. So actually, there's a hell of a lot of the Gavin and Philip storyline and its surrounding elements, like the dinner party with Roy and Helen and all that, that there's very little else to write about, and that you can't be funny about modern slavery. It's not funny. Not funny for anybody. So yes, it's all a bit difficult, really, but it's just, there's a lot of that storyline in the shows at the moment, but it's just inching along, like, you know, it's at a snail's pace, so we're getting, like, an inch closer to the sort of the denouement every episode, but it's agonising. And I just, you know, I'd even be quite pleased if they did a Dallas, you know, and someone woke up and it was all a dream. That would be fine. I don't care anymore. I just want it to be over. And if they don't finish it before they go off, that would be awful.
Well, far be it from me to be a foil for you, but I couldn't disagree more. I think the setup has been delicious.
No. I'm not saying they haven't done it well. It's just, for me, my personality type is just get on with it. Hurry up. And I find it very, very difficult when things are slow.
But you're a fan of The Archers and you don't like slow things.
I know, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I'm just a masochist, aren't I? I've picked the slowest moving.
You should be a fan of Neighbours or something. I think you're into the wrong docu-soap, madam. It's if you don't like slow stuff, well, I don't know how to help you.
Well, that's 25 years of my life gone, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Waste of time, that was.
I like it. And what I like is the fact that we're all detectives trying to work out who is going to work this out.
Yeah.
Is it going to be Harrison? Is it going to be Roy? Is it going to be Linda? Like, they're slightly teasing us.
Because most of the time we don't know, and we're trying to figure out who will find out. So like with the bloody bunting and the llama, we didn't know, and the Nick running over Matt, we didn't know who that was. So all our detective skills were spent on working out who it was. The reason this is so agonizing and the reason Rob and Helen was so agonizing is because we know something the rest of the cast doesn't know, the rest of the characters don't know. And that's why it makes me want to pull all my fingernails out.
Well, that must be agonizing. You must be in agony.
I am.
Doing that.
Total
I recommend
agony.
For you... a couple of weeks off The Archers. If you're pulling your fingernails out, you need some proper bed rest away from your radio.
Am I going to have to listen to flipping Doris Archer twatting on about jam for weeks now?
Well, I think Doris Archer was long dead 20 years ago. I think she, you know, she's expired. They're only going back 20 years
after are they? Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I think.
So that'll be when I started then.
Years.
Cool.
No, stop it. You didn't start when John died. You were well into it. You started like late 80s, surely.
Oh, yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, like that's like 30 plus years ago.
Mid.
Well, mid-90s. There you go. So
I don't know.
Anyway, it's not 20 years ago.
No, 25.
I could be wrong, but I'm almost certain they've said they're only going back 20 years with the archive.
Okay.
But anyway, there's a call about that later on.
And there's an email about this, which I need to read now, from Purple Pumpkin.
Oh, all right then.
I'm going to write to share my disappointment with the Archers' response to lockdown. Everywhere I look, businesses and volunteers are adapting to COVID lockdown, being creative and finding new ways of doing things. Radio and TV programmes are broadcasting for presenters' homes, but the Archers will go off air for weeks while they work out how to operate in a world that we all hope would have changed a bit by the time they come back. It just seems a rather poor show to me. Rant over, your loyal listener, Purple Pumpkin. I think that's very harsh, Purple Pumpkin. It's, A, the BBC has sod all money. The commercial channels can do what they like. They can change studios. They can fiddle around with things. The BBC is literally, is you know, on its uppers. And they are changing things, but how could you possibly broadcast a multi-channel, you know, multi-voice drama production from different houses to knit it all together? How could, you know, you can't do that. I think with absolutely no funding, an incredibly small crew, and a very committed cast who also became, like most of the crew, most of the Coronation Street actors and the EastEnders actors live very near where they record. The Archers people live all over the shop. They record in Birmingham, but they live everywhere. So it's much more difficult to get people together. It's much more, it's just, yeah, it's really, really tough. And I think that's a little bit harsh. And also they do it every day. You know, it's that they have a huge output, and yeah, I think they need commending that they didn't just go off and say, we'll come back when lockdown's over. You know, they're trying to be creative and think of ways to keep going.
What she said, I agree.
It's going to be one of those shows, isn't it? What she said? Yeah.
All right, so let's have a touch of this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And let's dive straight in with a touch of Dusty.
Hello, it's Dusty Substances here, the wrong sort of listener. Greetings to everyone in world of lockdown. I hope everyone continues well and with what we laughingly call our sanity intact. I suspect we're all struggling to a certain extent. I know I am, but all worth it. We will come through this. Anyway, over the last millions of years, I have probably been notorious for two things. One is my championing of Kenton Archer, who is possibly the only really decent archer, and also my complete horror that Shula is even considering candidating for the ministry. But last night, darling Kenton managed to speak for, well, certainly me and probably lots of us. He put his finger on all the right buttons and pushed them. And wow, didn't Shula react absolutely as we expected she would. So well done, Kenton. Round of applause. That's probably it, really. But hope everyone continues well and speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye. She doesn't seem to be, I don't know. She just, yeah, oh dear. I can't see it working, to be honest, at her being a vicar. And she, you have to really be quite thick-skinned, I think. And I have a friend who's a vicar, and he said he spends 90% of his time apologising on behalf of the actions of people, religious people across the world that are absolutely nothing to do with him or his own faith. But he still feels called upon to, you know, apologise for them and explain them and everything else. And yeah, she is very sensitive, as Kenton said. And although she did put up with Jim when he was being vile to her, didn't she? So
well,
she must be slightly more
stoical. That's what I was going to say. She's developed full body calluses since Jim. So, and that was there, obviously, with the benefit of hindsight, to show us her religious journey, or the journey for her to be called for this vocation, and the fact that she could weather that. But also, even though somebody has rejected her faith, and also at the start rejected her as a person, she still, you know, she still continued to care and to be there for Jim. That's to show us that she's kind of doughty in her faith and in her, and she's dogged, really. So totally with the benefit of hindsight, do we realise actually what they were setting us up for there?
Yeah.
To say that actually she's made of the right-ish stuff
but
when it comes to being
you have to have a level of insight. And if it came as a surprise to her that she was seen as controlling and sensitive, that doesn't say a great deal for her sort of insight, does it? Her own self-awareness. Because to be able to work on your faults, you have to know that they're there. And she seemed to be completely startled by the fact that somebody might think she was sensitive and controlling. And she is one of the most sensitive and controlling people on the planet.
I had a big chat.
Myself accepted.
I had a big chat with an uncle of mine just last weekend, or weekend before last even. And I've said this before, but one half of my family are big God botherers, my mother's side of the family. And I was talking about the attitude that I think the rest of us non-Christians who are part of that family think that the God bothering lot, the Seventh-day Adventists that, you know, lock down every Friday night at sunset through to sunset on a Saturday, just like Jews and stuff and whatever, and they're so pious, the attitude that they project to us. And he kind of stopped me somewhat slightly dead in my tracks, because he did say, that is your impression, and maybe it's other impressions, that we're all holier than thou and a little bit pious. But he says, a good Christian is a work in progress. And you're always looking back at yourself and trying to be a better person, as opposed, and I've always thought that the best Christians were, of any religion, the best adherents of any religion were the people who slightly question and slightly question themselves, as opposed to the ones that say, I've got all the answers.
Yeah.
Because my family, that they come over like, we've got all the answers, we're better than you, and they're up on mountain high. So I don't think Shula is that person. Because if you remember, when she first went to Alan with this, she went saying, I think I can do this. Alan asked her a couple of gentle questions and she massively wobbled. It knocked her faith.
Yeah.
But then she came back. So I think we're all being a little bit harsh on old Shula. But there's somebody who's harsher about Shula than you or I. And this is New York Nigel. So let's go to him next, because he really, like, first off puts the boot in and then says, coming round. Anyway, here he is. In his own words, forget mine, folks.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Nigel here in New York. Things have been a bit busy over the last weeks. Funny and lovely members of our congregation have died, and several have the virus or they're recovering, thank goodness, including two physicians and a nurse. I'm really appreciating and being thankful to Lucy and Roy Field and all the Dumpty Dum team. Thank you for making me laugh and keeping me relatively sane in the middle of all of this. And thanks for appreciating all the caller inners. It's such a lovely community. Your willingness to put yourselves out there is really moving. Having to be a streaming and recording and broadcasting vicar has made me so sick of my own voice. And I look and I sound nothing like I imagined. I've got so much sympathy for Roy Field when he says, oh my God, it's doing that thing. So keep doing that thing, Roy Field. You make us all feel like we're in this together. Quick word about Shula. I can't say I'm warming to her, but I'm starting to understand her, maybe. A few months ago, she might have been on my top 10 in Ambridge to wrestle with a virus, but I've changed my mind. I know there hasn't been much character development in the script, but I've got the feeling that the divorce helped her see herself a little bit like other people see her. She sounds younger somehow, as if she's going through a childhood I can't remember her having. And with a twin brother like Kenton, I'd probably be as horribly controlling and judgmental myself. Thanks, Witherspoon, for reminding us that The Archers doesn't know how to write a gay story. Surprise, surprise. Straight male sociopaths always get more nuances to them than any of the gay characters in The Archers have ever had. Mm. And we've only had two. And a quick congratulations to Roy Field's mum.
Oh.
I was ordained in the same cathedral, so we're sort of spiritual sister and brother. Aww. Thanks for everything. Hope to call in a bit more over the next weeks.
Aww. Thank you for the props to me, Ma. Oh. I'll make sure she listens to this week's episode just for that. So thank
Bishop
you for that.
Bishop Brown, I like to call her.
She's hardly a bish.
She is in my head.
Yeah. So I don't remember Shula being a kid either, because she would have been a kid before I was born, or when I just wasn't even listening even. But I do remember her being a young woman about town and going into Felpersham and whatever. And she was kind of racy-ish, wasn't she?
She went out with Neil, didn't she?
And also she was knocking about with the bloke at the estate agents and stuff. Like, yeah, so, I don't know. the cat, she has gone on that stereotypical drama soapy tropey journey. She has, you know, to end up with her wanting to be a woman of the cloth. This isn't where she set out at all. But her and Caroline at one point were two peas in a pod and were, you know, hopping in and out of bed with various men and stuff. So anyway, thanks to the call, New York Nigel. So sorry to hear that some of your parishioners have succumbed to the COVID-19. That is terrible. Moving swiftly on, from New York and Nigel, we have JR. Don't know if it's Ewan or Hartley. We're going to figure this out after this call. Oh, God, here we go again.
Hi, Lucy and Roy Fields and all the Dumpty Dummers. It's JR here. I'm a first-time caller in error, but I have emailed in before a few months ago. Somehow I think my message was lost. Originally, I'm also from the upper lower east west side, but I've lived in London for most of my life. I've been listening for about 11 years, so I'm technically an Annette. My favourite Archer's character is Lillian, and my favourite Dumpty Dum characters are Witherspoon and Babs and Trev. I always thought that there was something a bit off about Philip, so may I add that I was also right, along with Roy Field. My plot prediction for you is that during the Ambridge lockdown, Kirsty will start to realise that there's something amiss when she's stuck inside with Philip for weeks on end. And I also think Gavin's going to crack at some point, confide in Krusty, and then they'll both end up testifying against evil Philip. Anyway, that's all for me. Thanks for keeping me as sane as I was before the lockdown started. And bye for now.
Bye-bye. And if your email got lost, I'll hold my hand up to that. Unfortunately, if you use the contact us on dumdydum.com to send in your emails, 50% of the time it goes into my spam. And I'm much better at looking at my spam folder now. But there was a whole year plus where I just didn't. So there's a whole load of emails which were lost to the oblivion that is my spam folder. But so sorry about that, JR.
Or Aditi's inbox, which is the same thing.
Oh, you're on fire today, you. Well done. Well done. Anyway, you were going to answer the meat and potatoes of her call. I was just talking about the one specific bit which pertained to me being sloppy. So over to you, Frieda.
One of the reasons that I am anxious, apart from my hurry-up driver, that this story, the Philip and Gav storyline, should be ended before we go off, they go off for a bit and then change the format, is the idea that Philip and Gav are going to be shut in the house with Krusty, and the boys, Kenzie and Blake and all the others, are going to be left on their own because they haven't got any money, they haven't got any access to anything, and they will therefore, you know, either starve to death or have to leave or have to do something. And it will all happen in lockdown, which I kind of don't want because I think it would be a slightly bizarre, you know, I want him to be caught bang to rights just because he's a wrong'un, not because of the circumstances of the virus. So I would very much like I would like it to be sorted out, please, thank you, before lockdown hits Ambridge. Because, and also the idea of Krusty being shut in a house with somebody and how she'll feel about that when she knows. That's the awful thing. Every time she says anything at the moment where she says, oh, he's a good man, Robert, and all this, it just makes your skin crawl because you know that she's not going to think that in a fortnight's time or whatever it is. Ugh. Mm. We have a call about this from Welsh Witch. No, not a call, an email. It is obvious that the reason he was so stressed about Gavin's 30,000 wedding demand is because Gavin knew he had the money, but obviously Philip couldn't just produce that sort of money without raising suspicion with Kirsty. Similarly, he had to make up a plausible excuse for not employing Ed, as Philip couldn't run the risk of the other men talking to Ed and letting on the real situation. Just like in real life, I think that there are people who have bits of the information, but it'll only be when they talk, probably quite casually, that the whole picture emerges. Personally, I think his downfall will come when Roy talks to Linda and their stories don't quite tie up. To be a good liar, a good memory is needed. Although I would love it for Joy to be an undercover police officer and somehow be involved in the surveillance of the Mosses. Mm-hmm. I've also had a thought about who would find lockdown hard and realised Shula and Peggy would be the only residents who would be on their own, and wondered if the writers would take this opportunity to have Shula have a Jesus in the desert type experience. Anyway, thanks for the podcast. And she said, I love the Zoom meetings as well. Thank you, Welsh Witch.
Oh, can I just big up our last Zoom meeting? Am I allowed?
Yes. What do you mean, are you allowed?
Well, I don't know. Because I've taken a slight back step in this week's episode. Because I'm just in awe of you generally. And I'm definitely in awe of you now. So I just thought, you know what? I'll just button press and I'll just listen to Lucy. But just very quickly. So last Friday, we had Hedley Nick, who used to be, well, she still is. And that was, oh, God, damn,
yeah,
was it?
Technically, she still is, Kathy.
Well, Luce, we got what? A bit of a scoop.
What?
She's going to come back to go.
She's going to, really?
Yeah. It broke on Dumpty Dum on our Zoom meet, you know.
Wow.
So she will come back, but she says, I'll come back to go. So we had, there was 50 odd of us on there, and she entertained us for an hour. It was
not as odd
awesome.
As there was the first week, but anyway.
We do post the links on, not on Twitter, but if you DM us on Twitter, we then do give you the link. And also it's on Facebook and also on the Flick app. And I've got to say sorry to the people on the Flick app that I actually did post it, but I didn't hit send. So I did see the chatter afterwards. People saying, bloody hell, where's the link for this thing? Because I'd spoken about it. And I was like, oh, God, I didn't hit send. It was in the text bit. I was like, oh, God. But they had the where for all to go onto Facebook and find the link. Anyway, we had a great hour. There's 50 plus of us. I think there's like 55 at its height or so. And there was Katie Goff, who got really so excited. You could see her literally shaking and quivering when people at Witherspoon started speaking. She's like, oh my God, that's Witherspoon. Oh my God, that's Yogle there. And whatever. Anyway, the whole point of me mentioning this is to say that not this Friday, but the Friday after, we have Charlotte Martin, who is Susan Carter, who will be joining us on the Zooms. And at the end of the show, I'll tell you about my fiendish idea. Mm-hmm. For what I'm going to do with the Zooms, because they've worked really quite well. Anyway, that's me chatting. I'm all over and done. I'm spent, as you were, Freeman. Please continue.
No, we've done now.
All right, smashing. All right, I think the next caller is Merlin. I've got two buttons called Merlin here, though the waveforms
right.
are different.
Press both at
so,
once, we'll see what
no,
happens.
No, that'll be chaos.
Okay.
We'll take one at a time. Let's hope that this is Merlin. I'm going to, oh, yes. I know the reason why there's two, because his calls have been out of sync, right? So, one's called Merlin Use This. So, Merlin, we're using this one.
Hi, it's Merlin here from New Jersey. I'm really confused now. I'm completely out of sync.
Hey.
The message played in last week's Dumpty Dum was actually my message from the week before. So, no, I don't know if everyone will hear this message or hear last week's message, or maybe hear one from completely another time.
Or the future.
We may be just in complete Doctor Who world and everything time travel, and I'm just confused. But ignoring that, last week I did say, part of what I left as a message was to thank Lucy for her comments on Tim Brooke Taylor, fantastic comedian, and very much missed. One
yes.
of the adverts we get for Dumpty Dum, because we're in America, is for a TV channel that brings British programs to US, and it's called Acorn TV. I can't watch it because it completely reminds me of another great comedian and Acorn Antiques.
Oh,
and Victoria Wood.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. Anyway, Lucy, I also love you for your rant about disease and cancer. Cancer and disease is not a fight. By saying it is, you hurt the families and those who are suffering from it. It's a heartless term and pulls people down. It's not good to use. So thank you. And then I have a plot prediction. I don't generally do plot predictions, but I have one. Basically, Kathy has been mentioned more times in the last 3 weeks than she has for the last 3 months or 3 years, possibly. So I think she's got to worry. I think this is an Eccles moment, and she's going to get run over by Kenton before too long. Thank you for listening. Everybody, stay safe.
Oh.
Thank you, Merlin. Could you imagine if it was done like Eccles and Kenton backed over her and said, Jolene, you don't think I really meant to kill Kathy, do you? No, darling, of course I don't.
The most important thing about Merlin's calls is that I think he's now back in sync.
Yes. It must have been disturbing for him.
It was. He was missing the cut by like an hour each time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Because now I've moved back over to the UK for a bit, Merlin. We're actually recording earlier UK time.
Yes.
So, yeah, you're falling the wrong side of things. But I think if you just go a little bit earlier on the Monday, you'll get in. Anyway.
Now, so, Merlin, I am completely baffled about the times that people call in and the times that we do things. So I don't surprise me in the least that you are.
Right, oh, that's...
Can I do a quick email?
Oh, gosh. You're on it.
From Jen, mm-hmm. who said, I can't remember who it was that said any road in the Archers
Red
last week.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody said, was it Red Actors who said, does anyone actually say that?
Mm-hmm.
Jen says, and also my friend said, because he lives in Nottingham, was born in Nottingham, and he said it's a Nottingham thing. And Jen said, I would just like to say that we definitely do use the term any road and indeed any road up. It's part of our local living dialect across Nottinghamshire, parts of Derbyshire, and at least into South Yorkshire, if not further. Any road, I'd best be off now. Love the show, Jen.
Right, so that's cleared that any road stuff up. Now, Margot also lives in New Jersey, same as our Merlin. They're probably neighbours. Oh, my God, they could be going to the same grocery store and not knowing that they're who they are.
Standing
and both
2 metres apart, not
exactly.
Knowing who they are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Safe distancing, folks. But anyway, right, here's Margot. Let's hear what she's got to say.
Good afternoon, Royfield, Lucy, and Dumpty Dummers all over the world. It's Margot from New Jersey. Let's start off with Roy and his cringing conversation over dinner with Kirsty, Philip, and Helen. Philip is really great at coercive control, and Roy obviously chose the wrong moment to question about Philip's and Blake's relationship. Kirsty really became defensive, so I do wonder if it's going to be Kirsty, much like how Helen was, constantly in denial despite a friend screaming to her that something is wrong with this person. Our friends can often see things in relationships that we are blind to see. Kirsty really needs to listen to Roy. Linda inviting Philip over was probably one of my favorite things during the week, although I really wish that Robert was able to land a punch. It's insane to me that Philip is so good at lying, and it only seems that Roy is the one that's on to him. I'm hoping that Tracy is eventually going to lose Roman. I think that he's no good, but then again, Tracy doesn't always seem to have the best choice in men. I'm going to cherish this week of the Archers. I don't know what to expect with the archived episodes, but after Royfield last week saying that they aren't as good as we have come to expect, I'm worried that some of my most important part of entertainment and part of my routine will be changed. Let's hope that the scriptwriters get those new episodes out quick. I do wonder whose house is actually going to be the most interesting to listen to during their quarantine. You all have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Margot.
Also, just quickly... And I did say this at the start of the show, but I don't think I've got this wrong, but the archive is only the last 20 years.
Which is
listenable.
Not too bad.
Yeah, that's listenable. It's when you go, I'd say, mid-70s and before, then it's hard on the ears. You know, it's just the way it's directed, the way it's cut together, the pacing, everything. You feel like you're in a different world and not in a good way. You just, you know, it feels at times a little bit Amdram. Not all the episodes, because we've heard the barn burning down, and that's great. But yes, yeah, some of them, as I said, the folk singing in the bull, a whole episode. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So yeah. Anyway, what do you want to say to our Margot, Lucy?
Just that I agree with you. I find Philip's ability to just lie so glibly and almost convince himself really chilling. Because what's his face? Rob didn't actually lie. He just twisted the truth. But Philip's just so convincing, you know, when he says, yeah, no, I said he was, I said I was his uncle because they wouldn't let me into the ward otherwise. And that is, you know, that's realistic. It's what you would expect someone to do. It wouldn't sound wildly unbelievable. And the fact that this is all, you know, Roy's gradual, agonizingly slow discovery of the truth coupled with the bump on the head just makes it that much more frustrating, because Roy isn't sure that what he's thinking is, he knows something's not chiming right, but he doesn't know if it's him or whether it's because his head feels a bit funny or because he's being overly suspicious because it's Kirsty and he's very loyal to her and very protective of her. You know, this, it's so, it's just so convoluted. It's not straightforward at all, which is what's making it even worse, I think. It's, yeah, it's, I hate it, but it's being done really well.
And I think we can safely say that our Philip is a sociopath, because actually, is he that? I don't know. I'm stepping into Witherspoon territory, because you have to be able to commit the heinous crimes that he is doing, there's so much thought in it. This isn't just a crime on the spot. And he knows that society will not condone what he's doing. So he's hiding. So he's, and he's operating on so many different levels. There is literally the slave driver. And then there is the relationship he has with the one person who fully knows what the situation is, his son. So they have this really interesting relationship. Hence, as somebody said earlier on in the show, that Gavin felt, was very glibly like, just give us 30 grand. It's not that he's holding it necessarily over his father, but they share a secret.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So there's all of that. And then there is his public face, where he wants to be accepted as a legitimate businessman, a pillar of the community. He doesn't necessarily want to stand out, but he wants to be part of the village and stuff. So he has to project that face. And the whole thing is very complex, and actually I think very well done in terms of that. And you're completely right, Lucy, that that Rob was different, because Rob's temper flared up in front of people all the time. You know, the hunt or in the ball. You know, Rob couldn't contain his true nature, whereas Philip,
we don't even know what his true nature is. Is he a nice man with sociopathic tendencies, or is he a sociopath with nice man tendencies? He's just sort of, you know, I don't think he knows. He's such a horrid, baffling, nasty character, but capable of, you know, such sort of thoughtfulness.
Yeah, he does love Kirsty. Of that, there is no question.
But how can he, you know... What bit of his brain is it that's loving Kirsty that's also thinking it's okay to treat people like animals? You know, it's just,
because he doesn't see them as equals. Yeah. And, you know, I go off on tangents all the time and just have brain dumps, and, you know, all my ethics and politics come flooding out. But the way that racism works is that people who are different to you, you do not see them as being equal. They're just not. And that's the reason why you can then countenance treating them that way. His attitude is akin to that. Hence, horses. He calls them horses at least once a week, offhand, the horses. So that justifies him treating them like beasts of burden.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he might say that Blake is a good guy, but actually is a horse. His true feelings of these untermention, of these underpeople, are belied with his offhand comments to Gav. Gav is where you see the real Philip. He's much more, he has a temper. He is more strategic and thinking on his feet. You get that with Gavin. So he's like, is it a swan? So gracefully above water, feet paddling beneath it.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Margot. Oh, yeah, we've had a real little run of stateside dum-de-dummers. And I think this is our last one now. It's our Witherspoon, and he's from the Upper Lower East West Side. Over to you, Mr. Spoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers socially distancing around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Let's talk about Robert this week. He is suffering, not as much as Linda, but Linda is the identified patient and is working towards tangible goals. So in some ways, it's easier for her. Robert is a man adrift at sea. Previously, I said or wrote the following. Robert is demonstrating the corollary of mansplaining, man-fixing, but nothing he does works because, as Linda told him, he really doesn't understand her needs and isn't asking her what they are. So Robert winds up exploding at Philip. If another Ambridge resident heard the tale without the rest of the story, as a famous American radio storyteller Paul Harvey used to say, Robert would have been considered in the wrong. Question, should Robert have been bent out of shape about Philip addressing him by his first name? The only people we in America address by their surname are our parents, friends, and our prospective in-laws. Also, if we didn't know that Philip was the evildoer he is, would we blame him for the explosion because he went away for a long weekend with his fiancée and left his son in charge? Robert also exploded at Oliver. Both times he was projecting his anger at himself for not protecting his Lindy outwardly towards others. But we do know the truth, and Philip was deserving of Robert's anger. Robert believed he was in the right, but he didn't know how right he was. I liked how the scriptwriters played this on multiple levels. Mm. Well, that's all my pontificating for today. And remember, Royfield, I'm a psychiatrist, not a psychotherapist. I worked hard to get that MD after my name. Talk to you soon.
I made that mistake on Zoom.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking listening to Robert, I think. The thing about the names, if you are very uncertain of your ground with somebody, you would be cautious and call them, I would be cautious and call them Mr. or Mrs. something until I'd been given permission to call them their first name, but that would depend on how well I knew them. Obviously, I don't recall a time when Philip spoke to Robert Snell, so I don't know if they've already had that call me Robert conversation. I don't think they have, so it would make sense to me that he would be expected to call him Mr. Snell until he said, no, call me Robert, which he clearly wasn't going to do, especially in the situation that he's in.
Mm.
I would have played safe and said Mr.
Yeah, and when people speak up through that class divide, and you definitely get it on the Archers, it is Mr. Aldridge and Mr. Elliot. You do get that.
Yeah.
So there's one thing that's always really notice when I'm in the States is the deference that Americans actually have for people who have held any kind of office.
Well, you said even football coaches. People go bananas about football coaches.
Yeah, totally. You're always coach.
Yeah.
If you were a mayor once 50 years ago, you're still Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
Ex-presidents are still Mr. President. Senators, congressmen, etc. And, you know, America stars itself as not having titles, you know, landed titles. But actually, they like them. And they're much more in common currency than they actually are in the United Kingdom.
But they're more, it's meritocratic titles, isn't it?
True, but we don't call Tony Blair Mr. Prime Minister.
No.
We call him Tony Blair.
Mm.
Not even Mr. Blair. He's Tony Blair.
Yeah.
You know, Margaret Thatcher wasn't your exalted highness. You once ran the country for 13 years or however long it was. She was just Margaret Thatcher when she left office. Whereas Americans hold people up in another light. And also, I've heard lots of...
No, but then she was made Lady Thatcher and Tony Blair will be made...
No, that is true.
They all get their honorary title, I think. Well, most of them do. But still,
I think my fundamental point remains, if you're the mayor of Bradford and you did it in the 1960s, no one's calling you Mr. Mayor now.
No.
Or Miss Mayor.
Mm.
They're just not. And so I slightly disagree with you there, Witherspoon. And the other thing which I remember, this is admittedly, this is Canada, but for me, North America culturally, it's kind of all the same. Dropping Noah off the other day at university and his friends calling me sir, you know, in a way that I don't think that would happen in the UK, you know, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, moving swiftly on. That is Witherspoon. Love your calls every week, sir. And you are a psychoanalyst. Oh, did I get it right?
Psychiatrist, he is.
Oh, Jesus. There you go. Oh, I'll get it right one day. Anyway, Verity, please come to the rescue.
Just leave it like that. He's a psycho. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Verity. I'm a first-time caller in error. This is about my fourth or fifth time trying to record this. I'm calling from Edinburgh. My Archer's vintage is probably, well, the first word that I really remember is Siobhan and Brian and the affair and her getting dying. That's the first one I remember, but I'm sure I listened to it much earlier than that because Mum and Dad have listened to the Archers for years and years. And I always remember growing up listening to it. The reason I'm calling in is because of the Tracy storyline and the cricket team. I'm loving it, as usual. I love Tracy. But the funniest thing I found was how she had the Lav Hailer and decided that Lee was going to be in charge and really angry with him. And she was just sort of making it like she was the fittest person in the world and she was going to be great at it. And I noticed that she wasn't actually doing any of the exercises. Yeah. So whether she was able to do them or not was another question. But I just wondered what everyone else thought about her doing that. I hope you're all keeping safe. Hopefully we'll be able to keep enjoying the actors while lockdown happens. Later.
Bye.
Welcome to the gang, Verity.
I think I found it hugely annoying, the cricket bit, but I will forgive anything that's got Tracy in it. And when she said indignantly that you can't just give up fags quickly, it's dangerous. I absolutely love that. When she's indignant and defensive, that's my favourite. Indignant, defensive Tracy is my favourite Tracy. and she was just running around the outside with her megaphone, shouting at the others.
Well, she was sat down in a chair, shouting at the others, yeah. So Cecil B. DeMille style with a megaphone.
No, I did like it, but I just think though, getting Lee to do it is just ridiculous. But at the moment, I'm finding all storylines that are not moving us closer to busting open the Philip and Gav storyline annoying, as everyone knows. So there we go.
Verity, thank you for that. Welcome to the team. Said that before. I'm repeating myself, as is my one. Quilted Bunny, you're up next.
Morning. Quilted Bunny here. Royfield and Lucy were wondering when Ambridge last won the Borchester and District Cricket League. It would have been the 13th of September 1997. It was the day that Josh was born, and Ruth went into labour that morning, so David had to zoom off to Borchester General. Eddie, as perennial 12th man, would have probably taken his place in the team. Ambridge needed to win the final game of the season. They did so, and Dave, it must have been a straightforward birth, because David was back in the bowl, joining in the celebrations and shouting, "It's a boy, it's a boy." So there we are. The 1997 season, ever since then, sometimes they've even ignored the cricket team altogether one or two years, but they've decided that it was more fun to take the mickey out of the cricket team, struggling and what have you. But hopefully this year, Tracy will sort.
Oh, them nope. out.
Sort
Ended
them out,
it for
yes.
you there. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Bunny.
I don't know how you remembered that. That's amazing. 13th of September 1997. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a while ago, is it not?
Yes. Considering there's how many teams? Grange Spinney, Penny Hassett, Darrington. Who else is there in that
Little
league?
Croxley.
Yeah, Little Croxley.
Oh, we're going to have emails now.
Have we had Grange Spinney?
Yes, you said that.
Yeah,
yes.
All right. So how many is that? We counted maybe six teams, including Ambridge, five or six teams. To have not won it in 23 years in a six-team league is pretty poor.
Yeah.
They need to give it up, I reckon.
Yeah, but they usually end up fielding Peggy Woolley and God knows who else. So no wonder, really.
I had forgotten that Eddie was the 12th man. Like, when Quilty Bunny said that, I was like, oh, God, yeah. He always used to turn up, but he never actually really played. I had forgotten that. I remember John Archer was the star, wasn't he?
Yeah.
John was just, like, athletic and swashbuckling and whatever. So, and there you go. 2 years after the last time they won the league, he died. That's the reason
right.
why. Oh. Mm. Oh, John. Anyway... from Quilted Bunny and his almanac, his cricketer's almanac. Oh, copy of Wisden. That's what he had. He's got his copy of Wisden. We go to Tony, and he's got some stuff to say. So, Tony, say your stuff.
Hello there, it's Tony. Occasional Tony that phones in now and again, a caller in. I can't really remember why I'm calling in. It's taken me so long to make the application work. But yes, that was it. This Philip, the Ronan, and the wheels seem to be falling off his wagon, which is a very good thing. But I was trying to actually see the business case for his slavery, and I was thinking it must be very small beer. Then I worked out that each slave is probably worth £500 per week. Mm. He's got three of them. That's £1,500 a week, which is about £75,000 a year. Say his costs are £15,000 to keep them running. That gives him £60,000 profit. You can see why Gavin wanted his £30,000 for the silly wedding in far-flung places. Mm. So it is a considerable crime. Anyway, I'd like to say how much I enjoy Royfield's rants on social injustice. I may not always agree with them, but they are so eloquent and heartfelt.
Oh.
And I think Lucy's little true crime series are very lovely. Thank you for doing them, and I'm really appreciating things. Hope it's going well with you guys, and speak soon, I hope. Bye for now.
Bye. Thank I love Occasional that, Tony. Occasional Tony is now my new favourite caller in the room.
Because he just bigged you up.
And you.
Well,
no, it just sounds very nice. And I like anybody that begins the call with the words, I've forgotten why I'm ringing. I was just saying to Royfield, off air, ladies and gentlemen, that my short-term memory is now shot to shit. I don't know what's happened, but apparently I've talked about it with my friends because I thought that I was in the grip of early onset senile dementia. And they said, no, it's the lockdown. Everyone is running at a sort of a low-level anxiety that is just keeping 95% of their brain occupied. So you've only got 5% of your brain left to remember what you opened the fridge for. So I'm doing a lot of going back into the room I just came from, going, oh, that was it, and then going back out again. I'm doing that a lot at the moment. Mm. So, yes, if you are too, don't worry, you're not going crackers. Or if you are, we can both go crackers together.
Awesome. And... Tony, I fully appreciate your kind words about my little rants. Some people call them ill-considered and jumbled, but you call them eloquent. So I'm going with your description of my thoughts.
And also, Tony, I'm not sure that Philip would actually be spending 15 grand a year on his chaps because they don't seem to get fed very much. They're living somewhere awful. Three of them all crammed into somewhere very small. So, you know, I'm not even sure it would be that much, really. But yes, that's clearly why it's, you know, worth his while taking such an enormous risk, silly ass.
Mm. Right, that's Tony and our last caller in.
Can we do an email before the last caller in?
Okay, yes. All right.
Yeah. Sonia Scaffron, this is. This is called Ancient History because she's listening to old Dumpty Dum podcasts and she wants an update from episode 42. because apparently we play. This is like doing something when you're drunk and you can't remember it. You and Lucy played shag, marry, kill with these results. Royfield, you said you would shag Kate reluctantly, but the thought of the yoga flexibility sealed the deal, she said. Marry, we didn't say, she says, but the choice is so obvious both of you at the time you did repeat the name. So that was Fallon. And kill was Clive Horobin. And I said I would shag Ed, which Sonia doesn't believe, that I would marry a civil partnership with Lillian and I would kill Clive Horobin. So we were both of us clearly quite anti-Horobin at the time. She said, is there an update? So it's shag and marry and kill.
Okay. I'll go first-ish. Well, let's go one for one on this. So my shag is still actually, I think it's still Kate.
Really?
Yeah, shag.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
For no, all the reasons that I said before.
Mine is still Ed.
Okay. Marry.
Alistair. Just to annoy Shula, mostly. No, I've now completely fallen in love with Alistair. I think he's lovely.
It's probably still Fallon.
Really?
Who else is there? He's a bit minxy-like
Pip.
In Ambridge. Oh, God, no. No, no. No.
Who could I see you with? Oh, dear, no. It's not good, is it?
I tell you what, right? After just interviewing Emerald the other day, not only is she a stonkingly good actor, like, she's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And the way that she spoke about deconstructing, doing the voice of Emma...
Yeah.
That this was the previous actor's creation.
Yeah.
But she is the daughter of Susan. So she has to sound like Susan, but not too much like Susan, because she's, you know, and it's a handover from the other actor that played her before she went off to Hollywood, etc. A lot of these actors are kind of wasted on radio. Like,
she looks like Audrey Hepburn.
And she looks incredible, and a little bit kind of elfish, and just so incredibly young. Like, I can't believe she's 32.
Mm. Have you seen Perdita Avery?
Yes.
Blimey.
And also Ben, the actor that plays Ben Archer, Ben Norris. What a handsome young man.
Yeah.
I'm like, my God.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's one of those times I had to slightly check my sexuality. I went, oh, no, I am straight. But, like, what a handsome, handsome man. And a lovely human being as well. And you just... So the reason for me to bring that up is that I can slightly get mixed up now actually speaking to some of the actors and going, do you actually know what they look like as well? So it's completely put that line. Between...
So are you saying that you would now marry Emma?
No. But I can now see Emma as Emerald.
Mm.
So it's slightly confusing things in my mind.
Oh, no, I can't. No. I've spoken to Emerald and I still can't. When I think of Emma, I don't see her as Emerald.
Mm. Well, I must admit...
I do see Kate as Perdita, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Except I think Perdita is what Kate would like to look like if she ever brushed her sodding hair.
Who are we going to kill? Well, it's easy, and it's Philip Moss, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the kill is just the baddie of the time, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah.
As long as it's not Matt Crawford, because you'd always give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but you're a likeable rogue.
You give him a couple of hours to get out of the country and then send the police off.
Yeah. So... So we've been pretty consistent, though I think the whole point of her email was you always going on saying that you don't like Ed and that he's, you know, got an intelligent bypass.
Just shag. If it was more than that, then I would marry him, but I'm not going to marry him because he's an idiot. But I imagine he's an idiot with big shoulders and a good bottom, so there we go.
What about Chris Carter? Everybody likes a bit of Chris, don't they?
No, he's too much of a twonk. No.
But isn't that your chief crime against Ed? But you think he's a bit
no,
of a
no, because Ed's at least brave and Chris Carter can't even sort his own missus out. Well, she's clearly got a massive alcohol problem, won't let him talk about the thing that matters most to him in the entire world. You know, he's just sort of been bullied by women all his life.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
Okay. Just saying.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, make a powerful argument for saying that Chris Carter is crap. Well done, you. All right, so now, last caller in a row of this week's star-spangled episode of Dumpty Dump. Star-spangled because there's so many Americans on here. There you go. Not because we had any stars on. Oh, well, I suppose Lucy's a bit of a star. I'll keep going on about this.
I can be the star, you can be the spangle. It's better than grouting. It's what you just cooked last time.
Here's Fiona. She's in Pennsylvania.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers worldwide. Fiona here, the Fiona who only calls in about once a decade, as that's the gap between my finding anything useful to say. But Kirsty and her current situation. I've known two cases of people walking away virtually physically unscathed from terrible incidents. My brother was in the bomb squad when a device blew up in his face, and a friend who was a Red Arrows pilot when his plane crashed. In both incidents, it was not their fault, and they walked away with minor injuries. But both of them were immediately let go, told that because they'd experienced something deeply traumatic, that they had lost the ability to completely trust their work. Love is like that, and I know. Nearly 20 years ago, I had a triple disaster. A man betrayed me, I recovered and moved on. A man who was dear and trustworthy was killed in a car crash, and after that, a man betrayed me worse than the first one had. And after shock number three, I decided I was done. Like the Red Arrow pilot who cannot get back into a plane, romantic love and I were through. Kirsty is about to face her third shocking incident. Being left at the altar, terrible miscarriage, and now the imminent betrayal of Philip. And I think she will turn around and decide no more romance. But please don't say, ah, sad, because I think she's destined to become the doer of the village. The Linda Snell-like organiser, only without the sniff or attitude that Lindy once had. And if she's like me, she won't be bitter or sad, but she'll find joy in her solo existence. She'll find joy in being the one that others turn to, an admired, older, single heroine, and in years to come, she'll suit that role really well. Helen, on the other hand, whether single or not, will turn into the old, uptight, judgmental bore that is her destiny. So, chin chin, here's to us happy single women.
Mm.
Yay! Woo! I completely agree with that. I think Kirsty will just, yeah. Kirsty's too good for men.
Mm. I think Fiona made a very powerful and persuasive case for keeping Kirsty single.
Mm. Yeah.
But let's just hope that if that is the case, then she does have good friendships and has really strong companionships with key people in the village.
But she will, because she's nice.
But she can also be a bit bullshy.
Yeah, you know, but remember, she's only...
She can be. Mm. But I don't know if they're setting us up for a very slow coming together with her and Roy. You know, let's say if Roy was to discover this, to work out that Philip is a modern slaver.
Mm.
You can imagine that as he's zooming in on this, it's going to upset Kirsty. As he reveals it, she's going to hate him.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
Because it's going to bring her world crashing down.
Mm.
And you could clearly see that then, if that was then to be the case, that it's been foreshadowed with the reminding us of their friendship, with the wedding planning that Roy's doing, etc. So it's set up for that. And then she's going to feel stupid.
Hmm.
He will then console her as a friend.
Hmm.
And then it'll be months of kind of nothing as that storyline is then kind of over. The ramifications and the aftermath are kind of dealt with. And then it comes back in 6 months' time. And then they just are interacting. And then slowly but surely, they become closer.
Yeah.
And potentially it's set up for that because of their triangular relationship with Tom.
Mm. Yep.
Tom, I'm with Kirsty now. What? Or will Tom turn around and say, good on you, mate?
Mm.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yep.
Either one of the two scenarios work for me.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, maybe I'm too heteronormative. I just think somebody going through life by themselves is a little bit sad, but I would say it says more about me than anybody else. I fully appreciate that. So initially I think, oh, that's a bit sad. But if she's happy, good luck to her.
But she's tried 3 times to go through life with someone else. It's been a disaster. How many more times do you try before you think, maybe this isn't for me?
True. As I said, it says more about me than anything else. And it's just my initial reaction. I just go, oh, but like, you know, everybody should have, you know, that wonderful relationship and skip off happily, you know, in the meadow holding hands and whatever and blah, blah, blah. So either way, just don't write her ex. I love me some Kirsty.
Mm.
So we've got last email. Oh, we have another one.
Jackie, who says, long-time listener, I think I'm an Ed when he went off the rails back in the late 90s. I think Philip will convince Krusty that Roy has mental health issues or effects from his concussion that mean he's confused and not thinking straight, hence his mistakes over Blake. Roy will either bring Blake up with Krusty and she will tell him she's worried about his behaviour towards Philip, or Krusty will approach Phoebe over her concerns for Roy's health. Keep up the good work, Jackie from Bath. I think you're right, otherwise we wouldn't have had this concussion storyline. Plus, it's got to be something to do with the phone, because that phone has been mentioned.
Mm.
That phone should be in the shape of, you know, a massive red herring otherwise, because it's been talked about such a lot. Mm. It has got to be in it. I mean, it's too much of a red herring.
Yeah. Yeah, true that. And as you said, it's set up with him having the knock on the head and being all forgetful.
Yeah.
So him losing his phone, or is going to be like, oh, come on, Roy. You know, you had a bump on the head. All right, that's that. We're in the final straight of the show. It's time for us to chill, have a quick camp coffee break, go pat the dog. There you go. Pat the dog, stroke the cat. Then come back the other side and you'll have a touch of the yokels.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Yokel Bear here calling with the social media roundup for the week. And we've reached that point of lockdown. Is it week 5? Week 10? I don't know. We've reached a point where I'm literally doing the social media roundup from my bed. So there you go. What have we got to talk about this week? Well, we saw a very different side to Tracy this week, didn't we? I was a little bit disappointed. She turned into a bit of a tyrant. bit of a lazy tyrant because she was just sat in the chair directing operations for the cricket match. And that very strange training session that Lee gave. Anyway, what did people think about it? Well, Jan Mitchell said, "I'm not real pleased with Tracy right now. Don't you go messing with my Jolene there, Tracy. A more mature woman coming out for the local amateur cricket team should be applauded and not pushed out." Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jan. I mean, what did she say? Natural selection. It was all a bit rude, wasn't it? Darcy Jorgensen said she was a wee bit too Tracy. She somehow roped in Lee. I don't think he had any idea what he got himself in for. Yeah, he was completely oblivious at the end, wasn't he? Just like, oh, didn't you tell them that's what I was going to do? But Darcy goes on to say she was just plain disrespectful and just plain mean. Aside from Tracy, that will always be there, but I don't like her seeing her bully her own people. Yeah, and I think, I don't know, is Tracy a bully? Maybe, no, do you know what I think it is? I think it's a complete lack of self-awareness mixed with enthusiasm, which is also mixed with a really competitive nature.
Yes.
I think it's, you put her into this kind of situation, is a really bad mix. Mm-hmm. Tom DeYoung said, the team will fragment into the hobbyists and the wannabe professionals. The hobbyists will quietly find another pastime, and the wannabe professionals will be left without a full team. Tillian Corrigan said, looking forward to what we know is coming, I'm just a bit worried that they're going to be taking up hospital beds that will be needed for when COVID finally hits our bridge. Yeah, because by the end of it was just like, God, is Jolene, has she pulled her back out? What's going on? But also as well, Melissa Williams, I think, talking about COVID, she said, look, it's not really worth discussing what's going to happen with the cricket team, because this next time next month, there won't be cricket, there won't be the ball, there won't be Grey Gables, etc. It'll obviously be different because of the way that they're recording. So, yeah, I think there's something in that. Now, the other thing that happened, talk about people acting out a character. Robert did not see that coming. Fight mode activated. Yes. What did people think about it? Well, Lindsay Williams said, people have those kind of meltdowns and nervous breakdowns when there's an audience. Left to one's own devices, what's the point of shrieking and throwing a fit? Yeah, I agree with you up to a point, Lindsay, but there have been times when I've shrieked and thrown a fit when I'm completely on my own. Don't know whether that's just me, but yeah. But I think he was just pushed to the limit, wasn't he? He was just like, and yeah. Everything that Robert's doing is coming from a place of good intention, just not really thought through. And talking of kind of, you know, who he threw the punch at, Al Williams said, I think Philip is actually worse than Rob Titchener. He focused all of his evilness on Helen, so he wasn't all bad. No, I'm not sure that I agree with that, no. Al, but let's go with it. But Philip is keeping vulnerable people as slaves whilst pretending to be a cuddly, jovial Welshman. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I absolutely agree. I think it's two different kinds of bad, isn't it? There's a bit of me that wonders whether Philip's actually convinced himself that he's doing the right thing somehow. Exactly.
Yep.
Which obviously he isn't. Can't wait for the comeuppance. Now, we've also got a comment here for, I think this might be a first-time poster, from, and sorry if I've mispronounced that, Royfield Brown. Now, Royfield, new poster, yeah. I think, said that 2 weeks ago, he said 2 weeks ago that Robert had been suffering and had been through a horrendous experience. He's been at his wife's side as she nearly died. Added to that, that he's having no counselling, he's feeling dreadfully powerless and alone. His reaction to Philip made sense and was foreshadowed and predictable. Yeah, do you know what, Royfield? I completely agree with you there. I think you should comment more on the Archers. You seem to have a bit of a feel for it. I also agree with Rosie Glynn when she said, I think Robert tried to kick scumbag Philip out of the house and failed. Until someone, in brackets, Joy, is able to uncover the crimes that Philip and Gavin committed, Robert will not be understood. Now, the thing that I really agree with you there, Rosie, is Joy. She is perfectly placed to start asking questions and not letting go. This could be the reason why Joy's there. This is the way that Joy could be properly integrated into the village. And I'm getting to like Joy. Sorry, if there's any Joy haters out there. I'm getting to quite like her. But there you go. So many other things. If you look on our Facebook page, we've talked about Shula and her bishop's interview. Yet nobody's really interested. And many other things. So that's the social media roundup for the week. And I will see you in 2 weeks. And next week you have the lovely Millie Bell. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye, Mr. Bear. Awesome as always. Luce, yes. Do you want to give us some mirror headlines? Thank you very much.
I gave birth in the Sainsbury's car park. We tried to flag down an ambulance, but they thought we were cheering them. And as we know, I don't do the Facebook, but someone sent me this and it made me cry with laughing. It's headed coffin description. It's in the, I think there's some sort of for sale bit or something. Coffin description. My nan didn't die, so we are selling the coffin we purchased last Thursday. It is 5'4" long and in as new condition. Social distancing may be difficult on collection as it's quite heavy. We put my granddad in it to see if we could lift it in a practice run, but if you bring 4 people, it should be okay. Fits in any hatchback with a little squeeze. I just love the idea of the granddad being told to clamber in it. Anyway. Right. Okay, tweets of the week. Kerry Warbis. They're playing the Robert being a suffocating fusspot thing really well. He's suffocating me and I'm in Brighton. Joanne Salmon. Any weaknesses, Shula? Yes, my main weakness is that I'd make an absolutely shit vicar. Rich Cuts, leave him, Robert. He ain't worth it. Actually, give him a quick kick in the balls from us. Absolutely. Claire Key Worker Williams, what we want is for Harrison to gate crash the nuptials with Philip Moss. I am arresting you for being a gangmaster, utter bastard, and a total embarrassment to Wales. And this is the cleverest tweet of the week ever. You ready?
Yep, go.
It's from Helen, not Archer. She says, Shula faces the bishops head on, forgetting that they can only move diagonally. Genius!
Well done all. Oh, goodness. I got some news, Lucy. To you. I have slightly road tested this with 3 Dumpty Dum listeners.
Okay.
But the Zoom chats, I think, apart from the old man playing his downstairs banjo and the neo-Nazis and the porn, put that all to one side.
apart from the porn, the Nazis and the masturbating, it's been going really well.
But we've had 2 which have gone really well.
Yeah.
And I think the format works. I have a little bit of a chat with the actor, and then we have a quiz in between. Then we have a Q&A, and people can ask their questions. And it lasts for an hour. So what I'm going to do, folks, is in a week and a half's time, you'll get Charlotte Martin, our Susan Carter, on air. But when the coronas are over, I'm going to move this just for Patreon and PayPal subscribers.
Ooh.
The format works really well, and I think it's much better than just saying to people, you get a special podcast of me just chatting to one of the actors or a writer that does the show.
Oh, yes, so you get to join in.
Exactly. You'll get to join in. It's much better. You get to see them, interact with them, ask questions. It's a much richer experience. So that's what I am going to do. So, but it will only happen when the lockdown is over. So don't people saying, oh, bloody hell, this is one way of stiffing us so that you have to pay to get this. Because I didn't think of this at all when I set up doing this, but it's just worked so well. And I can see, especially, you know, the last couple that, and also the fact we're having like 50, 60 people online all at once, you know, it's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, and it's great. You know, so that's what we're going to do.
I forgot, by the way, everybody, I forgot on Friday. I'm sorry. I was talking to my friend and I suddenly looked at my watch and realized it was 20 past seven. And then I thought I'm a bit late now. And then it would look really rude if I just turn up. So I didn't. So I'm sorry, but I will try and do it on Friday. I'll try and remember. I'm an idiot. Sorry.
The other thing to say is if you are if you can't make it, I will post them onto YouTube, but keep the links private. So it won't be on the official YouTube channel. So you'll still get value if, because of time constraints, whatever, you physically just cannot get onto the live stream and you've paid your money, you'll still have access to it, exclusive access. So I'll just unlist the link and I will email you the link. So you'll still get value from being part of Patreon or a recurring payment on PayPal. As I said, I just think that it's just so much better value than you just getting an extra podcast with an interview. So that's what we're going to do. But we'll only do it after the lockdown. As soon as it's lifted, then we'll start instituting that. Because we also do have a decent relationship now with the BBC Archers kind of like kind of press room and stuff, and
except that we're still not on their link of affiliated.
We're not, and I must admit, I have to give up worrying about that. So we have a great relationship with Sean Harwood over there at the BBC in the Archers office in Birmingham, and he got us the interview with Ben and with Emerald, and that all went through with them. So with that in mind,
thank you, Sean Harwood.
Yeah, you've been a total, you paid a total blinder there, mate. So that's what I'm going to do. So if you would like to make sure that as soon as the coronas have been lifted, the corona lockdowns have been lifted, that you get access to those interviews, go on to patreon.com, and it's $2 per show is what you donate, and then you'll get emailed with the time of the Zoom meets going forward. And if you can't make them, you'll get emailed with the link of the recording so you can still watch it from the comfort of your laptop, iPad, mobile phone, or whatever. So that is a rock solid reason for going onto Patreon or going on to PayPal and giving us a recurring payment. Why don't you read the other stuff there, Lucy? Because I'm spent.
It's always vaguely upsetting when you say that. Remember, to get in contact with us, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website, or you can call 0203-031-3105 to leave us a message. You can find Yokel Bear at Dumpty Dum, where he is at Much Cleverer Than Us, and Lucy is at Lucy V. Freeman, and Royfield can be found
at Royfield.
Yay! Oh, and I've got another, me and Harriet have got another thing coming out. When is it going to go up, Mr. Blown?
It will go up 2 days after this. You've got, folks, a whole load of content coming your way, because not only are you going to get Lucy and Harriet's latest dramatic instalment, you're going to have the email interview of Emerald, which I'm going to put out at some point, Also with Ben Norris, who plays Ben Archer. That's going to go up.
Royfield's new boyfriend, that is. Yep.
Absolutely. And then...
That's who you should have said in Shag, Marry, Kill.
That's a step too far.
Is it?
Me. Yeah.
What, killing him?
Not marry him, though. And then also the recording which you did with Hedley Nicholas, on Friday, but I'm also going to put up on YouTube as well. Because it's great to be able to see all the dum-de-dummers on their various tiles and then asking their questions as well. So in the next 2 weeks, there's going to be a lot of dum-de-dum content. And it's all going to be free content. It's either going to be up on YouTube or you'll get it in your RSS podcast feed. But just bear with us. So, and then what I think I'm then going to do going forward when the coronas have been lifted, the interviews which were made available just to the Patreon listeners, the old interviews, so me speaking to Charles, who plays Brian, etc., which were done last year, Lexi and so on, Annabelle, who plays Kirsty, I'll slowly just release those onto our podcast feeds as well, because I think the focus of the Patreon, there's so much value in Zoom, in those Zoom meetings, that we should keep those for people who support the show financially. And then, because Lucy's not going to say it, Facebook. Go there, Facebook, and have some Facebook action with Yokel Bear, Merely Bell, and Witherspoon doing their thing. Now, Lucy, it's the end of the show, and I believe you have an email which pertains to rounding off an episode of Dum De Dum.
This is Melanie Matthews, who said that she is suggesting the Skimmity Hitchers and their song West Country Holiday. It's not a bloody holiday, in brackets. Full disclosure, the Skimmity Hitchers have not only been my favourite band for the last 10 years, but 4 years ago, my partner, always a rock god to me, was recruited to join them when their old guitarist left. So I was involved in the camera work for the guitar bits. I wondered whether Coriander and James, Leonie and James, would escape from London to stay with Linda and bring the coronavirus to Ambridge. My other coronavirus-related plot prediction is that Philip and Gav will get the virus and end up not being able to leave the house, and his boys will be found starving, locked up somewhere. Yes. Anyway, thank you for Dumpty Dum, which is keeping my spirits up during my commute to work in a prison. Lockdown is pretty grim out here, but it's a whole other thing for the guys behind bars, so it can be a pretty stressful job. Love to you and Lucy, Mel. Love back, Mel, and my God, you are doing a tough job. Good Lord. Mm. Yes. Chin up if you can. And hopefully it will all be over soon. And here is, I feel like a radio DJ. And now to get you through the commute, it's the Skimmity Hitchers.
So if that was me, I'd have done it like pirate radio style. Special shout out going out like to the Ambridge Posse. Yeah, I'd have dropped it like that. And then
gone
straight
into it. Nobody would have understood what you were talking about.
I think, right, you've got a bit of a low opinion of the cultural breadth and dexterity of our listenership. Just saying.
Okay.
I was sat in my Chelsea flat, reading about coronavirus. I said that won't affect me, no. 'Cause I'm a proper King Midas. I saw the poor folk and the nurses, the people struggling mentally, but I just looked ahead as I jumped in my Bentley. Whoa, 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 whoa. I don't want the virus. Oh no. So shove it. Oh no, so shove it. Don't you come near my car, don't you look in my eyes, 'cause I'm heading to Cornwall with hoarded supplies.
Do you think you've got enough avocado?
So I passed over the borderline,
smug, safe and insular. On the road to my second home, on the Lizard Peninsula. I'm laughing and I'm loaded up with bog roll, coke and bolly. It's a frightening pandemic, but I'm just on a jolly whoa, whoa. Oh no, so shove it. I don't want the virus. Oh no, so shove it. Don't you know who I am? Don't you know where I'm from? I'm a rich, selfish prick coming straight out of London. But when I got to the promised land, I started feeling all nervous. The locals looked proper angry like, and my phone had no service. Come on, that's not fair. I demand a good reception. Take your big foot off my head. Take that pasty out my rectum. Whoa, whoa. We don't want your virus. Oh no, you muppet. Don't want your virus. Oh no, you muppet. Don't you come around here, said a stout Cornish maiden. Piss off back up the smoke with your general contagion. Your virus. Oh no, you muppet. Don't want your virus. Oh no, you muppet. Don't want your virus. Oh no, you muppet. Stay safe, people. Look after each other. Cheers.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.